Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
This podcast is for mature audiences. It contains graphic violence and adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
Realm presents Blood and Gold, starring Richard Cabral. Episode 9. 1851, San Jose, California. Political and social upheaval sweep the globe, undermining democratic governments. In France, President Louis Napoleon III dissolves the French National Assembly to extend his term. He will leverage this move to declare himself emperor and end the Second Republic.
I left San Jose the next morning. The warm glow imparted by my new clothes had faded somewhat after my encounter with Antonia Molinera. She hadn't rejected me exactly, but neither had she taken me up on my obvious advances. I had been devoted to Rosita for so long that I had no experience with other women, and I wasn't sure how to approach them. Some of the men had brought their women to the camp at Arroyo de Cantua. I hadn't objected. A man needed his pleasures after all, and I knew that the love of a woman could be the greatest joy of all. But having failed to make any headway with the only woman who'd interested me since losing Rosita, it made me resent their presence. So when I saw Sofia Gordo, Pedro Vergara's woman, storming toward me with her skirt bunched up in her fist, her brows arched and a scowl on her plain face, I knew there was trouble coming. Further, I knew that I'd have to control my temper or I would explode. I tried to keep my voice pleasant, but I wasn't entirely sure that I succeeded.
¿Qué pasa, Sofia?
It's that cabrón, Reyes Carrillo. He's got a woman in his tent.
Reyes? Good for him?
Not good. She's been bawling like a newborn ever since she came. I tried talking to her, telling her it's not so bad here. I even tried to tell her that Reyes is a good man. But lying makes my throat dry, and I couldn't get it out.
What's her problem?
She's here against her will. He took her from her home, right in front of her widowed mother and her own lover. She wants to go back.
He stole her?
At gunpoint, according to Pedro.
Why didn't Pedro stop him?
Have you ever tried to stop Reyes from doing something stupid? Once he gets an idea in that thick head of his, it's hard to shake it loose. Pedro didn't want the gun pointed at him. That's all.
When did they arrive?
Late yesterday. She's been wailing ever since.
Do you think he had his way with her?
If he did, I'd yank off his balls and feed them to him.
I didn't doubt that she made the threat or that she would follow through on it. I'll talk to him. Gracias, Sofia.
Just do something, Joaquin.
The camp had settled into a reasonably efficient shape.
I slept in the single intact room of the old house, where an iron bedstead still stood, rusty but usable. Tres Dedos slept outside the doorway, a human blockade against anyone who might try to challenge me. The others had tents pitched around the house in a disorderly maze. Carrillo's tent had been patched at least a dozen times, and some tears remained. So did the bloodstains left by the two men Carrillo had killed when he took it, at least in his telling. As I neared it, I could hear sobbing from within.
Raiz!
The flat flew back. Carrillo emerged, strengthening up as he did.
Yes, boss.
I pointed to a few meters away. Wait over there. I'll deal with you in a minute. Carrillo eyed me with a mixture of concern and suspicion.
Yes, boss. Does this have to do with the girl?
In a minute, I said.
Yes, boss.
When I pulled back the flaps and entered, the sobbing girl let out a shriek.
I'm not gonna hurt you.
My patience was already at an ebb. If she didn't quit with the tears, I was going to erupt. She nodded her head and swallowed. She was, I had to admit, simply stunning. Blonde, with a fair face that could have been sculpted by the finest artists in Europe. She was one of the most beautiful creatures I have ever laid eyes on. But I had a set of rules for my men. And if Sofia's story was true, Carrillo had broken one of them. Don't worry, nothing will happen to you. What's your name?
Sadie. Sadie Ann Avery.
Tell me what Reis did. Between bouts of sniffling and weeping, she told me the same tale that Sofia had. Carrillo had seen her on the street and simply decided then and there to take her. Her fiancé had been walking her to her mother's house, and they were almost there when Carrillo approached them, pistol drawn. He forced them into the house, then made her gather a few things she couldn't do without. When her fiancé objected, Carrillo slashed the man's face with his gun, knocking him down and opening a bloody wound. Once she had the few things she needed, he dragged her outside, put her on his horse, climbed up behind her, and brought her to the camp. Has he touched you?
I just told you he did.
That's not what I mean. Do I have to be specific?
No. I know what you mean. The brute put his hands on me in places. But he has not ravished me.
Do you want to go home? Or stay?
Home? I want to go home, please.
You don't like Reis?
I despise him. He hurt my Franklin.
Franklin is your lover?
He is my betrothed, and he is a gentleman.
So he has not touched you either?
Of course not. Please, take me home.
I will. Or rather, Reis will. Well, something for your troubles.
Do you mean it?
I am Joaquin Murrieta. I keep my promises. She took a few deep breaths. Her mouth was open, and for a few moments, I thought she might offer herself to me in gratitude. She would be hard to turn down, but I steeled myself against the possibility. Not only would Carrillo forever seek the moment in which he could drive a knife into my heart, but now that I had met Antonia Molinera, I wanted only her. Who, like this growing Carrillo, didn't want me? But I had rules, and one of them was the woman must be respected. I would not countenance forced arrangements. Some of the men groused about this rule, and a couple had even left the ban over it. I would not bend, though. Wait here, Sadie. I'll talk to Reis and tell him what to do.
Will you go with us?
Do you want me to?
I don't trust him.
Now that you mention it, neither do I. Yes, I'll go with you.
Oh, thank you. You truly are a savior.
I wouldn't go that far, but I will keep you safe. Carrillo didn't like it, but he also didn't dare go against me. That night, Sadie slept in my bed. I slept outside the room, listening to Tres Dedos' snores. In the morning, Tres Dedos, Carrillo, Pedro Vergara, Manuel Cevallillo, Gregorio Lopez, Pancho Dominguez, and I mounted up and rode 6 hours to a farming community not far from Monterrey. Carrillo tried to claim that he didn't remember where the girl's house was, but she spotted a familiar rock outcropping and knew the way from there. We arrived at a small wooden farmhouse surrounded by fields cultivated with vegetables and one meadow in which sheep munched tall grass. Sadie's mother was sitting at the table, her eyes and nose red from crying, when Sadie burst in. The older woman lunged toward her, knocking over a chair. It clanged against a wooden stove before it clattered to the plank floor. Despite her silver hair and lined face, it was easy to see where Sadie's beauty had come from.
Mama, I'm home.
Sadie's mother saw us crowding through the doorway, Carrillo among us. Her relief at having her daughter back gave way to rage.
Have you come back for me now? If my husband were alive?
Sadie broke in and pointed at me.
Mama, that one's Joaquin. He protected me from that devil, the one who took me. He made him bring me back.
The woman started toward Carrillo, her hands turning into claws. She eyed a knife laying on a sideboard. Sadie grabbed her, held her back, imploring her mother to let us speak.
Ma'am, I am sorry. I am sorry I took your daughter. I am sorry I hurt her friend.
Did he touch you? Not that way, Mama. Not the way you're thinking. Are you sure? I'm certain. I would know.
Carrillo reached into his shirt and withdrew a bag of gold nuggets from a previous robbery. I had told him it was the price he had to pay. He held the bag out to Mrs. Avery.
This is for you, for your trouble.
Where's Franklin? He went to the doctor in Monterey. He was gonna try to raise a posse to go after you. He mustn't do that. I'm perfectly safe. Joaquin made sure of it.
Sadie's mother studied me. I could almost see the puzzle pieces fall into place for her.
You're the bandit? Joaquin?
I gave a little half bow.
At your service.
And you protected my daughter from that beast.
We have a rule against such behavior. He was so struck by Sadie's beauty that he forgot it. But I reminded him. He understands he did wrong, and he'll never do it again.
Can you be sure of that?
If he breaks the rule again, his punishment will be swift and painful.
I think he deserves it now.
Another rule, everyone gets a second chance. He has returned her unharmed and paid you for your worry.
Mama, I'm fine. Joaquin made sure of it. There was a woman, Sophia, who took care of me as well. Even Ray East wasn't so bad. He just frightened me and was nearly the death of me. And Franklin, I am so sorry that happened, Mama, especially for you.
Her mother took a step back and gave Sadie a stern look.
What does that mean? Franklin didn't protect me, Mama. He hardly even tried to fight off Reyes. That man's a ruffian, and he had a gun. What would you expect Franklin to do against that? We have a brown bess and knives, cast iron pots. He could have found some weapon. Instead, he tried to use fisticuffs, and Reyes got the better of him in an instant. He didn't even have to shoot. I'm only saying there are men who would have done more. Franklin's a good man. He has a career. In a bank, he works with numbers, not with his hands. He's soft.
I'd heard enough.
Mrs. Avery, Miss Sadie, we'll let you two discuss this in our absence. We're sorry to have troubled you, and we're glad to see Miss Sadie safely back in her own home.
Should any further harm come to her at any time, you have only to tell any Mexicano that I'm needed and I'll be here. We won't trouble you any further.
Thank you, sir, for your good manners and gentlemanly ways. You won't be soon forgotten.
Her mother started to say something else, but Sadie silenced her with a glance. I pushed open the door and gestured the other men outside, and with a final smile for the ladies, I followed. When we were all outside, Carrillo grinned.
I think she liked me.
I stepped near to him, grabbed his crotch, and squeezed. If you want to keep these where they are, you'll never think of her again. Carrillo's face blanched. He swallowed hard and nodded. I turned to the others. I saw a bank in the little town on the way here. If we're gonna be chased by a posse, let's at least try to make it worth our while.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We fell asleep to the deafening buzz of crickets that night and woke up to the racket of grackles. The town that we passed through on the way was barely that. Just a crossing of dirt roads with a feed store, a dry goods store, the bank I had spotted, a saloon, and a few scattered homes. The businesses served the surrounding farms. The buildings were sun-bleached and dusty. And when we rolled into town in the morning, there was hardly anyone on the street, and only a lone horse tied to a rail outside the dry goods store. Tres Dedos grew skeptical.
If there's any money in that bank, it's probably less than price of a bullet.
It's early yet. When we came through before, there were more people around.
Do you have a plan?
The question came from Pancho Dominguez. The former cavalry officer was quite fond of plans, I had noticed.
A plan?
Why do we need a plan? We've never robbed a bank, Joaquin. I feel better if we had a plan. For a moment, I considered whether to slap the man, shoot him, or humor him. Here's our plan. We go in the front door with guns drawn, demand the money, and leave. I haven't been in a lot of banks, cousin, but don't they usually have guards? Do you see any guards? Any people at all? Trust me, Manuel, this will be the easiest money we've ever made. I saw no reason to delay. I dismounted and directed Dominguez to stay outside with the horses. The other men and I drew pistols and went in. The inside was almost as dusty as the outside, giving the impression that nobody had been there in weeks. There were two barred windows on the other side of a blank stretch of tile floor. And behind those, a doorway, through which I saw part of a safe. At first, the building appeared empty, but then a man stepped out of the other room carrying a tray of some kind, which he almost dropped when he saw us.
Can I help you, gentlemen?
The quaver in his voice suggested he already knew what we wanted. Is Franklin here? At that, the man seemed to take some slight relief.
No, not presently. Can I tell him you asked for him?
Never mind. The safe is open. Yes?
You can see that for yourself.
The man was slight, with thinning hair and small spectacles perched on a tiny nub of a nose. He was trying to keep his terror from showing, but his lower lip was trembling, and he could hardly hang on to his tray.
Then you can help us, or we can get the money ourselves. That's up to you.
I'll get it.
All of it. Cevallo, go back there and make sure he doesn't miss any.
Cevallo nodded and went around the counter. The banker had already disappeared into the other room, so Cevallo hurried to catch up. He always wore Mexican spurs with big silver rowels, and they jingled as his boots clicked on the floor tiles. By the time Cevallo reached the doorway, the banker was already at the safe. Then I saw the flurry of motion I recognized.
Cevallo!
Too late. The next thing I heard was the boom of a shotgun and the wet splatter as the load ripped a hole through Cevallo's middle, blowing blood and flesh and innards across the room. The banker swung back into the main room with a double-barrel shotgun in his hands, looking for his next target. The first blast still echoed through the empty space and rang in my ears. And smoke hung in the air as what was left of Cevallo's dropped to the floor. I fired first, but three other guns joined in. My shot crashed through the man's right lens and into his eye. As his head snapped back, three more rounds struck him. He dropped the shotgun, but stayed on his feet a few moments longer. I almost fired again, but the banker sank to his knees and pitched forward, his left hand landing in a pool of Cevallo's blood.
Get the money.
Lopez was the first one at the safe, stepping through the gore as if it were just spilled water. Carrillo followed. Tres Dedos crossed to the bank's front door and stood just inside, watching the street. I stayed where I was, watching the other men empty the safe into some money bags they found inside. The jangle of coins piling up was the sweetest music. It didn't take Carrillo long to dash my hopes.
There's not much in here, jefe.
He came back through the door, carrying two bags. Lopez held one more. Not much indeed.
I didn't expect there would be in such a small town, but we needed something to show for our troubles.
We stepped carefully past the banker, who was still twitching on the floor, blood seeping from his ruined eye. Tres Dedos checked the door and met my gaze.
Looks clear, but that made more noise than a virgin on her wedding night. The town's still asleep. There won't be any trouble.
I shouldered past Tres Dedos and went outside. The other men followed. Pancho Dominguez looked anxious, and so did the horses.
Saddle up. We need to get out of here.
Not so fast.
I spun around to see two men coming out of the dry goods store. One was stout, wearing an apron, and his hands were empty. But the other wore the sky blue pants of an American soldier and had a pistol in his hands. Someone behind me fired first, but his shot flew wide, kicking up dirt in the road a dozen feet away. The soldier fired back, but his round only knocked Adobe from the bank wall. Tres Dedos and I both shot at once. I missed, but my cousin's aim was true. A red blossom spread on the man's shirt. He remained upright, though, and fired again, his aim thrown off only a little by his wound. Lopez cried out. I didn't dare stop to check if he'd been hit, but I corrected my aim and shot the man in the upper chest. More guns barked around the soldier, and with three more rounds in him, he finally buckled. He squeezed off one more shot on his way down, but it soared harmlessly into the air. Now I turned to Lopez. He was bleeding from a gash at his temple, but it looked like a shallow wound.
Can you ride? Yes, Joaquin. It's not too bad. On your horses. Let's go.
I was helping Lopez into his saddle when I heard a rustling behind me. The shopkeeper had snatched up the soldier's pistol and held it in his two quaking hands. He didn't even seem to take aim, but simply fired into the group of men before him. His first shot hit Tres Dedos' horse in the muzzle, and his second struck Carrillo in the small of his back. Carrillo stumbled. I caught him and lowered him to the ground. Tres Dedos and Lopez returned the shopkeeper's fire, both hitting him several times. When he dropped the gun, Tres Dedos stormed over to him, holstering his own gun and drawing one of his knives. The man sank to the earth and sat there, tears rolling down his pudgy cheeks as Tres Dedos approached.
You're about to die. How does it feel?
The other man mumbled something in return, but I couldn't make it out. My arms were full of Carrillo, who was bleeding heavily and whimpering from the pain. The horses were making noise too, stomping and kicking and braying.
Can you get on a horse?
No, I don't. I can't feel my legs.
You'll be fine. We just need to get away from here.
Am I dying, Joaquin?
You'll be fine, I said.
I heard the sound of Tres Dedos' knife cutting flesh and bone, and the shopkeeper's strangled scream suddenly cut short. I didn't want to think about what Tres Dedos was doing, and my reassurance to Carrillo's notwithstanding. I was beginning to doubt my own promise. If I released Carrillo, he would pitch forward or back. His legs seemed to no longer work on their own. I was holding him up against one of the horses to help him with the man's weight, but the horses were on the verge of panic, and the one that had been shot was down on its front knee, screaming in pain and trying to shake the fire from its muzzle. I couldn't think through the racket.
Somebody kill that horse!
Lopez put a gun to the roan's skull and fired twice. The horse went slack and fell onto its side. Quiet at last.
Pancho, help me get Carrillo onto my horse.
Dominguez joined me, and together we hefted Carrillo up, draping him over the back of my horse. Carrillo cried out in agony.
Get some rope. Tie his wrists to his ankle so he doesn't fall off. And hurry.
I climbed into my own saddle, looking this way and that, expecting more town folk to come see what the commotion was. So far, all remained quiet. Tres Dedos mounted up. Lopez finished tying Carrillo onto my horse, then did the same. Pancho was the last, trying his best to keep the other horses calm until we were all ready. Then he scrambled into his saddle.
Cabalguemos!
Not wanting to be tracked, back to Arroyo de Cantua, we rode east, toward the Sierra Nevada. The wide open space of the valley here would make it easy to spot pursuit. And if we had to go to ground, small communities scattered here and there would hide us if need be. After about an hour,
I realized that Carrillo hadn't been moaning or whining for some time. I raised the hand, and the others reined to a halt around me. I pulled off my hat, wiped sweat from my eyes, and turned in the saddle. Carrillo was still. Blood had ceased to drain from the wound in his back. I reached over and gave him a nudge. No response.
Is he dead? Tres Dedos asked.
I think so. Tres Dedos jumped down from his horse and lifted Carrillo's head. I couldn't see the man's sightless eyes, but I didn't need to. Tres Dedos looked at me.
We should dump him. He's extra weight for your mount.
Pablo Dominguez disagreed.
No, we should bury him.
I shook my head. That'll take too much time. It's only right. There might be people after us.
Look back there. Do you see any dust clouds other than our own?
I shielded my eyes against the sun and scanned the horizon.
I don't.
Then we should bury him.
Tres Dedos liked the idea even less than I did.
Should we fetch a priest? Find the churchyard. The man's dead. He doesn't care where his body lies.
His spirit cares.
Joaquin, my cousin. It's sweet that Pancho is a pious man, but does he understand who we are? What we do?
Of course I do, Manuel.
We steal. We kill. We're not exactly the kind of men that priests look kindly on. I doubt your God does either.
The Lord despises our sins, but he loves us. We will be forgiven.
I think there's a limit to what he'll forgive. We've reached it and gone beyond.
You might not have yet.
Perhaps you'd be better off rid of us.
I go where Joaquin goes. I'm no general. I take orders. I don't give them.
Anxious to put an end to the discussion, I finally came up with a compromise.
We have no shovels. And it's more than Savilio got. But if you want, we can pile stones over him and you can say a prayer.
I like that. We can keep it short.
Tres Dedos growled.
We'd better.
By nightfall, we had reached the foothills of the Sierra Nevada. We made camp there and in the morning, cut north and skirted the mountains until we reached the old Sonorian camp.
Carrillo had a brother there, and I wanted to tell him the fate that had befallen his sibling. That took most of the day, so that night we slept at the home of Tres Dedos' friend, Alfredo Puente. Heading south, we got a later start than intended, and by the time we reached the ferry, landing to cross the Ptolemy River, it was almost midnight, and no ferryman was around. A rare summer downpour had swollen the river, and no one wanted to try swimming their horses across it.
We'll just take the ferry and leave it on the other side. The man can swim over tomorrow to retrieve it.
I dismounted and walked down the path to the ferry. It was a simple raft, planks set across logs, with wooden railings all around to keep people and animals in place. Ropes linked it to a similar landing on the far side, but heavy iron chains held the ferry fast to the dock, and two huge padlocks joined the chains. Nothing I or the others carried would break those chains, and although we could try shooting the locks, even that might not work.
It's locked up tight. Big chains and bigger locks. We need the ferryman.
The ferryman lived in a little cabin just over the rise. We'd passed his home to reach the spot. I walked my horse while the others rode, back to the top of the low hill and over its crest. The cabin stood beside the road, with a row of pines beside it to block the wind from the east. The other men dismounted, and I pounded on the door with the grip of my pistol. A minute passed. I was about to knock again when I heard a shuffling noise inside, and then a key turning in the lock. The door opened a few inches, and a man holding an oil lamp showed his face. Who's out there?
Your next passengers. I press the barrel of my pistol under the man's chin. His eyes widen and he bobbled the lamp, almost dropping it. He was gaunt, with unkempt brown hair, wearing only drawers cinched with a belt.
Ferry's closed until morning.
I pushed the barrel deeper into the man's tender flesh. I believe it is morning, or near enough. The ferry's open again.
All right. All right. Let me put some boots on and get the keys.
He backed away from the door and started to close it. I caught the door and shoved it open. We'll wait inside. And while we're here, we'll borrow whatever money you collected from your previous passengers.
Borrow?
I could see that he was afraid, but determined not to show it. I respected that. Well, not borrow, perhaps. Let's have it. The man carried the lamp into a small kitchen area. He reached into a cupboard and took out a coffee can, which he emptied onto the table. An assortment of coins and a few demand notes spilled out. Tres Dedos laughed.
That's it. You need to raise your prices.
That's all I got.
Lopez started looking around the cabin.
There must be more somewhere. Don't try to hide it from us.
If I had it, I'd hand it over. I don't want to die. It takes most of what I make with the ferry to pay off the county sheriff. And I sent some to my wife and my boys in Kansas. I should have gone back there when my claim was bust. But I fell into this, and I stayed put. Anyhow, with outlaws all over the place, folks ain't traveling as much. So most days, I don't make but one or two trips across.
Dominguez offered to search the place, but I shook my head. No, I believe him. He doesn't sound like a liar to me. He sounds like a poor, but honest man.
Poor? Anyhow, still, take what's there. Just don't kill me.
Lopez took his hat off and started toward the table, intending to scoop the money into it. I stopped him. Leave it. Keep your money, sir. Take us across the river, and we'll pay for our ride. Tres Dedos eyed me with a raised brow, but he didn't question me. The ferryman tugged on a wool shirt and some boots, pulled on an old hat, and took a ring of keys from a nail near the door. Thus outfitted, he led us back down to the river. There, he unlocked the raft, tossed aside the chains, and held it steady while his passengers boarded. The trip across the river took only minutes, with the ferryman heaving mightily at the ropes to keep the craft from being swept downriver by the strong current. At the other landing, he again steadied the raft for the bandits to disembark.
What's your usual fare? 2 bits a person, $1 a horse.
So, we owe you $4.80. It's not a bad wage for a few minutes of work.
That ain't much when it only happens once or twice a day. If that.
No, I suppose that's true. Gregorio, give me one of those sacks from the bank. Lopez looked like he wanted to argue, but I thrust a hand at him. Lopez tugged a sack full of coins from the saddlebag and handed it to me. I placed the bag in the ferryman's hand. This should cover our passage.
That's too much. I mean, you don't need to.
I insist. Your wife and son's in Kansas. Do they want to join you here?
They want nothing more than for us to be together again. They are here. Either one.
Perhaps that's enough then. If not, surely it'll be close. He was about to protest again, and I silenced him with a raised finger.
Say no more. You're a poor man. So are we. Or we were. I'm a Mexican, and you're a white. But poverty binds us more than race divides us.
Take the money, sir. And thank you for bringing us across. I am sorry to have awakened you.
The ferryman shook his head, unable to hide his amazement.
Thank you, sir. You're a right honorable feller.
My name is Joaquin Murrieta. If anyone asks you who woke you at gunpoint, tell them that. And if they ask you whether Joaquin has honor, be sure to tell the truth.
You're listening to Blood and Gold, starring Richard Cabral. Blood and Gold is a Realm production in association with Stryker Entertainment. Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Blood and Gold stars Richard Cabral. Based on the novel Blood and Gold, The Legend of Joaquin Murrieta by Jeffrey J. Marriott and Peter Murrieta. Produced by Marco Palmieri, Fred Greenhalge, Kaylin West, and Haley Wagreich. Adapted for audio by Greg Cox. Directed by Fred Greenhalge. Executive produced by Molly Barton, Marcy Wiseman, Russell Binder, Peter Murrieta, Julian Yap, and Richard Cabral. Historical notes read by Elena Ray. Spanish dialogue translated by Alana Graffam. Regional dialect coaching by Luis Armando Mercado Campos. Sound design by Eric Mooney. Mixing, mastering, and additional sound design by Rory O'Shea. Audio editing by Corey Barton. Original score by Juan Carlos Enriquez. Music supervision by Marcus Pagala. Production manager Alexis Latshaw. Production coordinator Angela Yee. Casting by Sunday Bowling and Meg Mormon. Cover art by Kendall Thomas. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadolahi. Find more shows like Blood and Gold by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.